We are not full of God's grace in the same way that Mary is, because she was immaculate, because that's how he created her. That's how he saved her. He saved her before she was even born. We are women encouraging and equipping women to universally and uniquely serve Christ in their feminine vocation.
By embracing joy, laughter, freedom, and friendship, we are seeking to thrive in the trenches of our domestic churches.
Welcome to Thriving in the Trenches podcast. This is Becky Carter.
And this is Megan Schreiber. You're listening to episode number 22. This is Lead the Conversation and our follow-up to last week's podcast with Dr. Carrie Gress, where we discussed the Marian option. So, Becky, we've had a lot of feedback, and all of the feedback I really could relate to, so in one way or another. So I want to dive right into our conversation and our discussion with some feedback that I got from an anonymous person, and this particular woman was having trouble reconciling with the word sweet, the word that we heard Carrie use, the word that we have used also in describing our feminine role and the modeling of Mary and that element of sweetness. So this particular woman said, I'm a really driven person. Her career is very important to her. She is very competitive. And she does know that these are inherent gifts that God endowed in her. And she really couldn't quite pair sweet up with that. And I just, in conversation was listening, and she did kind of say, I just don't see myself being that mousy type of woman. So it was interesting how the Lord kind of pricked her heart with that word sweet, and how in this particular woman it really had a negative connotation. So, just in having that conversation, I really wanted to kind of get our arms around the idea that it does not mean mousy, right? Yeah. It does not mean that we take our drive and our desire to compete and excel and leave sweetness behind. I think sweetness is a way to flavor both of those aspects in our role as women. And I think that's a really unique quality that we have. And I think it should be embraced.
Yeah. How would you, because as you're saying it and you're using the adjective mousy, and that's what it is not. So how would you describe it? How would you describe sweet? And how would you describe mousy? Because yes. I think that's an important thing to go ahead and clarify. Yeah.
Sure. So the way this particular person was describing mousy was somebody who was a pushover, somebody who remained quiet, somebody who sat behind a man and was potentially unwilling to really lead. Okay. So the sweet, though, to me, means being able to show a tenderness. And that's different than being unwilling to speak up or unwilling to take a lead. So for instance, I would say that if our drive or our competitiveness is disordered, right? That is no longer really a gift. So if I am so driven in my career walk that the dignity of the next person that I'm looking to get past is not even on my radar, right? I am so driven that I'm not taking into account other things that are going on around me, and most especially a person, right? I've turned the issue that I'm driving towards to be a bigger goal for me than, say, that person, right? And I think we learn this in relationships too, right?
Oh, definitely.
Right? It's like when we are in a situation, we have to remember that that other person is bigger than the issue. boy, I think our country could really stand to hear that message now in everything that it's going through. So I want to clarify that I believe that sweetness is that ability to be tender and to connect with the heart of another person. But it does not mean laying our drive aside or our competition aside, right? So it's like, I try to kind of but maybe put it in the perspective of an athlete. You know, if an athlete's move or is a signature, slam dunk, right? And they go after that at all costs to win the game. And in the process of that, they are damaging the other team's players with concussions and, you know, we have to take a step back. That competition has gone too far, right? And that's that maybe for somebody who is struggling with the word sweetness is to think about it in an element of tenderness, being able to have that ability to have a sweet spot, right? We talk about that. Oh, now it's funny, I'm picking up tennis on this, but you know, when you hit a racket and you've really hit it in that sweet spot, right, it becomes the perfect shot. So there is something about falling right into the middle of something that you're doing that is still ordered in the right direction, and it has an element of sweet or tenderness wrapped up in it, right? Does that help at all?
Yeah, no, it really does, because I think sweet is one of those words that are very arbitrary. And maybe that is the word I'm thinking of, but many people could put many different definitions to it, you know. And you're so good at the etymology of a word, and so I didn't know if you actually had looked it up or not, but that definitely hurts, and that hurts. That definitely helps. And I think that it'll help me and our listeners try to wrap our mind around more of what are we getting at with this virtue called meekness. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm thinking of, because, you know, I love to cook and I love to eat, obviously. Sweet. What is sweet? Sweet is the sugar. So we could make cookies without sugar. And what are they going to taste like? I mean, they'll taste like cookies, but they're going to be missing something. The scriptures talk about being salt and light to the earth, the leaven in the bread. So I keep going back to this analogy in my head when you were talking, and the sweetness is really what completes that flavor profile of whatever you're baking. Cooking.
Sure.
And so.
So you're onto something with that, because, you know, we go back to a little bit of word origin, and sweet essentially, you know, was something pleasing to the taste. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think about that in, again, going back to those other analogies of drive and competition. Drive is good, and it should be pleasing to the taste of others. As well, right? So if that drive has become so disordered that it's offensive, that it's negating another person's existence, we've got it out of whack. Definitely.
Or it accuses, or it degrades, it makes someone feel bad. When I definitely relate to this, by the way. I am super competitive also, and very hard-headed. but when we were early married, when something wouldn't go right, someone didn't handle a situation correctly outside of our family, then, and to this day, Jim still does this, but he calls me bulldog, because I will get on the phone and I will address the situation, and I will not demand, but I will put them into a spot where, no, you really should repair this, or you should rectify this. So anyway, I think about that adjective bulldog or noun. I'm being called a bulldog. That means that I'm bullying someone around. And I found now that when I get on the phone with a customer service or some place or anyone, that if you kill them with kindness, that really does get you so much further than if you pick up the phone and you start automatically acting like a jerk.
Sure.
And demanding things or entitled to something. Mm-hmm. So I would say I've put a lot more sugar in my demands.
There you go. That's right. What's that saying? You can better tempt a bee with honey than with vinegar or something like that, right?
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it must be a Northeastern thing and not a Southern thing. I don't know. And I'm sure I probably have it a little bit mixed up. But you know, we've all been the recipient of a drive and competition that's out of balance, right? Mm-hmm. And you do feel like you've been bulldozed. Mm-hmm. And you think, geez, how can I possibly really ever even try to see what they're trying to say or what they're trying to accomplish? Because I'm just left in the wake of this feeling I've been bulldozed.
Right.
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 And then we've also been in the company of somebody who has a tenderness and has an ability to maybe speak something that's difficult or move past us, even though maybe we really wanted something. But we can recognize in that there was an element of respect towards us, despite the fact that we might be in competition with one another. Mm-hmm. And you really come away from maybe coming out on the other end of that situation on the, quote, losing side and being okay with it, right?
Yeah.
You know, I kind of liken this, too, to our girls are rowers, and there's a school that's, you know, kind of their arch enemy. And I've seen some of the behavior from the girls on this other team, the archenemy team. It's rude, it's bombastic, it's crass. And I can remember saying to my girls, I know you lost that race, but I got to tell you, I'd much rather you lose that race and be the woman the women that you guys are than to win and be those women.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The more we talk about it, the more we put light on it, the more I can just see all kinds of situations. And you know that when you come across someone who is living out that virtue, I mean, Carrie was one of them.
Exactly.
You know, Carrie definitely held a gentleness and a sweetness. When you talk to her, I feel like she's my new best friend. She's
Thanks,
so
Becky. Boy, you boxed me out of that fast.
I know, right? Dumped. but anyway, you grow in respect for someone when they can act that way, when honestly, by the world's standards, they don't have any reason to act like that. They could get around with their crassness and, you know, they have all the accolades to act like they're better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's definitely got the accolades, but she does not have a crass attitude at all. And I listened to several of her interviews, you know, mm-hmm. and none of them is she that way.
Right.
So, right. Anyway, okay, so let's move on, because mm-hmm. we could talk about that, I
sure,
guess, for
exactly.
a long time, you know?
Right, and we have two other points that came back in
yes.
feedback that were just so important to touch on, so I'll let you lead with that.
Okay. All right. So Vanessa Pro Life, she says, I'm loving the whole conversation on meekness. I often feel like a failure because I'm naturally sarcastic, having teenage boy humor, and I'm constantly working on my use of profanity, not just in my home, but when surrounded by those who first impressions of me don't always take away thinking, that's a Christian woman. I feel the good things I speak up for are counteracted by my other not so virtuous qualities. It's the Auntie Mary in me. I wouldn't say I'm resentful of her example, but I sometimes feel hopeless that I will never exude holiness the way I see many people do. I just have too big of a mouth. And then she goes on and she says, you know, she comes from at least three generations of being raised by single moms. And she knows that strength has always been identified as I can do it by myself. I can bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan, you know. And then, but as she has come to terms with true Catholicism and her role as a woman, you know, in the face of today's climate, she says it's been quite an eye opener for her. I see more strength in myself when I can keep my mouth shut versus when I face confrontation head on. Being Hispanic, Mary was a figure that of our faith, but never much more than that. I see the anti-Mary, not just in the current state of feminism, by how society proudly regards single momhood. We don't need no man, she says. Mm-hmm. I'm all over the place here, but my mind is going, and now I just need to connect the dots, but I think I'm on to something. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Vanessa, I really appreciate your transparency in that, because I totally see that. I mean, I have this, well, everybody knows. Well, she works in the pro-life, the pro-life realm, and she tries to have a pretty big voice for that. And you know how hot and heated that whole topic can get. But if you want someone to see you as a Christian woman, then you cannot walk around, I don't know, not meek all the time. You know, if you're constantly dropping F-bombs, if you're constantly cussing, if you're constantly talking about people, if you're constantly, you know, I understand getting upset and having moments where you just got to let it all out. But when it is your everyday language, I find it very contradicting, because I don't think Mary would be talking like that if she was here and now.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. Well, I'm going to second your affirmation to Vanessa with the transparency. I think that's awesome. That's why we're doing this podcast, because we want to be able to talk about these things. And, you know, I can't remember now verbatim what she said, but, you know, saying something along the lines of, you know, not that she's resentful towards Mary, but sometimes she feels hopeless that she can't maybe mm-hmm. model that, right? Yeah. So we've all been there. We all feel that to some degree. So certainly not to feel hopeless about that, yeah. right? We're all striving. We're all on a journey, right?
Oh, well, I definitely hear when people say, well, be like Mary. I cannot be like Mary. That's like right. saying I need to be like Jesus all the time.
Right, right.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. And I think too, you know, circumstances of her family life, and that is that generational run of single parenting, has produced a level of self-reliance, which is only normal, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I have it as well, that not the single parent piece, but times where I needed to be self-reliant, which, again, that's not a bad thing. But once that's gotten out of order, it's been disordered, it does become a bad thing. Because what happens is, and I'm speaking for me, is that characteristic of self-reliance, which is a go-getter, get it all done type of thing, can remove the need and remove the opportunity for people to be a part of my life. And that's not good. You know, am I sending that message to my husband? Like, and I did often, like, I got this, no big deal. I got this. You know, you keep saying that, I'm going to create my very own problem, that he's like, okay, you know, I'm not really needed here. I'm not really needed in this role. And then, you know, I can't turn around and be like, hey, you don't do this and you don't do that. I've been telling him I don't need it. So mm-hmm. that's when it gets out of balance, right? So this conversation is so fascinating. I think it's a wake-up call for me. It's a check into my life and what I'm doing. And if it's okay, I do want to just read something, because mm-hmm. Vanessa did say that she could see that Auntie Mary. She could see that, obviously, in the feminist movement, but, you know, little sprinklings of it in her own life, right? Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure we all can. So I want to go back to Carrie's article that she wrote back in January on the Auntie Mary. And this is just a short piece, but it says, again, this is an excerpt from her article. What then would an anti-Mary movement look like exactly? Well, these women would not value children. They would be bawdy, vulgar, and angry. They would rage against the idea of anything resembling humble obedience or self-sacrifice for others. They would be petulant, shallow, catty, and overly sensuous. They would also be self-absorbed, manipulative, gossipy, anxious, and ambitious. In short, it would be everything that Mary is not. That was a little hard to read and to hear. And
she describes our culture and a lot of me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I'm sitting here as I'm reading that, I'm thinking, I don't want to be called shallow and catty and self-absorbed and manipulative. I don't, gossipy. I don't want any of those things. And then I get to the last word, ambitious. I'm like, dang, I kind of want to be called that. So, right? You see, but to what end? I mean, Carrie is not saying ambition is bad. Okay.
Right.
We have to put that in perspective. Again, going back to that self-reliant example, there are times that we have to be self-reliant. But if we are self-reliant to the point that we are suppressing our need for others, or we are suppressing those people in our life who want to be part of our life, that's not balanced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It all goes back to that. The intention of your heart. Mm-hmm. Is it driven by charity? Are you willing the good of another? Or are you just making sure you get what you need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, knowing, I mean, for 40 years, for me, my idea of what love was an emotion. Mm-hmm. Maybe not 40 years, but pretty close. Love was an emotion. Love was marriage. Love was kissing and all these great, wonderful, euphoric feelings. But it wasn't until we came back to the church and the catechism giving these amazing definitions and explanations of what the virtues are, and charity being love,
mm-hmm.
you know, willing the good of another.
Right.
That's a game changer.
Right.
And I'm trying to drive this into my children. Okay, well, you want what that child has, or you don't want that child to touch something of yours. Well, you know that if you start acting in a certain way, it is going to stir up anger. And is that good for your sibling? Is it good for you? And Scripture tells us, do not stir up anger. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a serious prescription of the Bible.
Right.
So we've got to think about in our daily life, how do we do that? Scriptures right. even tell us, you know, a lot of people know, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right.
Mm-hmm.
But they miss the next couple lines. Fathers, do not stir up your children to anger. And so, and this goes on and on. I mean, this isn't just in the family dynamic. This is in every dynamic. Nobody likes to feel angry. So if you're stirring them up to anger, mm-hmm. then you're not willing the good of the other.
Right.
That's and right. there's no freedom for conversation and joy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, we kind of circling back too on that meekness, I think, a lot of people probably have trouble with that word, and we go back to reading kind of the antonyms of what they mean. Mm. And I would think that most people don't want to be described as any of those things, right?
Right.
And so we do look to Mary as a model, and I think sometimes we have probably painted this picture of Mary in our mind too that is just. Like, oh my gosh, so saccharine-like. I want to say it that way. You know, when we were talking about mm-hmm. sweetness, there's that element of sweetness that is a genuine moment of tenderness. And then there's, you know, the sweetness that I remember from middle school, you know, which was phony, mm-hmm. fake, and so saccharine-like. Like, hi, how are you? Oh my gosh. Like, that's not mm-hmm. what we're talking about in that sweetness piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? So, yeah, to think about Mary, you know, I think about her and it's like, I know this is a crazy thing to say and I may have said it before, but, you know, imagine she's got to do a chore, right? St. Anne's asked her to go get some water, whatever it is. And she's a little bit cringing inside because she's got to go walk past all those girls, all those girls who are talking about her and who are like, yeah, sure, whatever. Sure, whatever. That's how it happened. It was mm-hmm. It was that sheep herder, wasn't it? We have no idea the barrage that she endured, right? Mm-hmm. And she just kept on. She just kept on. And I think about that, too, because what is her response? I'm sure her response was not one that just lay down and walk all over me. She had this silent strength that she just kept persevering. And why and how? Because she was available to God, but she trusted and trusted and trusted. Mm-hmm. And we know, because the Bible said this, even in these things, you know, she got angry. Not angry. Well, she when Jesus went off, right, got lost.
And she got onto him.
Yeah, 2 days looking for, you know, she didn't come back and she wasn't like, well, there you are, son. I'm so thankful. She was like, what'd you put your dad and I through, right? Mm-hmm. And then what does the scripture say? Well, he returned and was obedient.
Think about her life. She was pregnant, not with a man married. She had to face all the things that could have gone wrong there. She traveled. She escaped people trying to kill her, her son. She watched her son grow up to be tortured by the Jews, her people. if you can't, I mean, that strength, she did not meekly or like a mouse hide over in the corner watching it all go on and just cry and cry and cry. No, I mean, she put her 2 feet to the ground and she walked with them.
Right.
She stood by him the whole time. That's not mousy. That's not a doormat.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And so we need to remember that part of it too. She was exactly. a mama bear.
I also think about this. Like, you imagine you're 9 months pregnant. Your husband's like, hey, we got to go somewhere and you're going to sit on that donkey. You imagine any one of us today, we'd be like, are you kidding? You're kidding me. Right? That wouldn't go over very well. Then
she probably said, are you seeing angels again?
And then you think about this. She's been exposed to birth, right? You know, in a village, right? You see how the women function as, you know, doulas and midwives and things like this, right? So she's thinking this is a good thing, right? Then all of a sudden she's stuck in a barn, which is a cave, with a guy who's not done this yet.
Right.
That, to me, is the height of strength. And all that, she didn't turn into being self-reliant.
Right. She was full of God's grace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to remember that, too. We are not full of God's grace in the same way that Mary is, because she was immaculate, because that's how he created her. That's how he saved her. He saved her before she was even born. We're saved at baptism, right? We receive the gift of salvation, and then we hit the ground running. Kind of.
Right.
So there is a difference there. So we still have that concupiscence, which is mm-hmm. the big word, but that propensity to sin.
That's right.
So we have to remember that we are still in a battle against those sinful, you know, ways. And mm-hmm. so we won't be perfect.
Exactly.
But God still fills us with his grace. And by God's grace, can we even do any of these chores he gives us?
Mm-hmm.
Any of these virtues, they're gifts.
Right.
Because those virtues are really what sets us free from the grips of sin. So let us not feel hopeless.
Right.
Let us go back to the Lord in prayer, through the sacraments, through confession, the Eucharist, adoration. Like, those are the encounters with Jesus that will fill us up and give us the grace to be who he's calling us to be, so that we might live in joy through these trials. Okay, one more last thing.
Jeez, amen. Preaching amen. Becky. All right.
Give me an altar, sister. All right, one more last thing. So this is kind of funny. So we'll end on a little bit of a funny note.
Okay.
It's funny, but it shouldn't be funny. But I giggled, but I shouldn't have giggled kind of thing. All right. So I was on Instagram and I follow this one account that is just, she's just known for being funny. And she posts a picture of a naked Ken doll, you know, Barbie and Ken. Mm-hmm. And we've all played with Barbie. We all know what Ken looks like down there. And she says,
he looks like nothing, by the way.
Yes, right. There's okay. Nothing there.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I was trying to be all sweet and not talk about awful things. No, just kidding. All right. I'm pretty sure this is what my husband thinks will happen if he gets a vasectomy.
Ha ha.
Okay. So I did giggle a little bit. Because it's funny, but that shows still that I am twisted and I'm still feeding into, there's my high school teenage boy humor. There you go, Vanessa. See, I have it too. But it goes deeper than that. And it did actually, once I realized what was happening, this account had like 1,400 comments.
Wow.
That's a lot, Megan.
That's and a lot.
They were all like, this is hilarious, hilarious. And tagging friends, tagging husbands, and poking at the husband. So here this gets back to what Carrie talked about, this matriarchal society. Mm-hmm. And you, I remember in... What you said is, I've never felt attacked by a man, mm-hmm. but I have felt
oppressed.
Oppressed, that's the word, by women.
Mm-hmm.
And so here it is. And then we're doing this over and over. We're making fun of men. We're degrading men.
On that topic of the humor of the post and all of that, you know, one thing I'd say is that, hey, men at least know where their fertility comes from and they're willing to guard it to some level. Okay.
Yeah.
So for that, I give them credit. And for those women who don't realize that their fertility is a gift, that's sad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hey, men, stand strong. You know?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So at any rate.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us again this week on another exhilarating podcast. We're so grateful for all of you with us in the trenches. You can find show notes on thrivinginthetrenches.com. Please subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where you can join the conversation. Thanks for coming.